you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. We're at liveparanormal.com. We're at raisingthevibrationradio.com. I'm at SheenaMetal.com. I'm your host. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I said that backwards. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 26-year talk radio host, and I'm the founder of the RaisingTheVibration.org movement, which is a movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. On this show every week, we encourage those four words and also encourage, again, love, people to ascend, to inspire, to evolve, to love. I talk a lot about love on this show. Every week on the show, every Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, I pick out the, in my opinion, the best, the brightest, the most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in the spiritual and paranormal communities and beyond. People that I know who care about passion, people that I know who care about unity, who consider us one human family, who have dedicated their lives to service, and their life's mission is about passion, being part of the whole and making the world a better place. And my guest today is certainly no exception to that. He is such a lovely man, a talented filmmaker, talented writer, producer, talented human, talented spiritual being, just a wonderful person, and has a fantastic library of movies that really bring heart and soul into the paranormal community. And I just saw his latest film, and I'm so about it. So please welcome to Raising the Vibration somebody who's been a guest on many of my shows many times. This is his first time here on Raising the Vibration. The wonderful Christopher St. Booth is here. Hello, my friend. It's so wonderful to hear your voice. How are you?
Hello, love. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Wow, it's great to hear your voice. And I have to tell you that I watched your latest film right after you and your brother Philip were guests on my Haunted Playground show here on Live Paranormal Network. And, man, we're going to spend some time just talking about that, because that was an experience that blew me away.
Yeah, that was an experience to make. It was like four years in the making. That one was, whoa.
Talk a little bit about it before we dig into it, and a little bit about why you were inspired to make it, would you?
Well, the attached, it kind of came by a little bit of an accident, because we were doing a bunch of other paranormal films, and then what happened, we started somehow collecting, or they found us, attached items, whether they were dolls or things that were used in exorcisms or whatever it may be, and they were collecting in my basement, and we were starting to feel energy from them, and things started to happen. And they said, you know, we need to film this. We need to document what was going on and then really get behind the story of what was happening. And before you knew it, we started writing the segments about the artifacts and the different collections of the haunted attachments we had. And they started to write their own story, whether we went to an asylum, we found out very sad stuff that happened there, and we felt we needed to tell the story of the victims, of the ones that were basically caught in limbo, and document and help them cross to the light by telling this story. So one story led to another, and before you knew it, we had a slew of attached stories, and we said, well, we've got to make a documentary film out of this. So that's kind of how it all went, and it actually went more than that, because it actually changed It changed my life quite a bit, and it set us all, you know, going towards a different area in our life. So it has a big, very emotional vibe to it.
Yeah, it's beautifully done, and it's got so much heart and soul in it, which I love. And something that is, I think, very important to mention out the gate, when we're talking about haunted objects and objects that hold the spiritual resonance of something, I think it's very important to talk about the fact, you know, we talk a lot in the spiritual community, right, about thoughts are things. And if you really believe thoughts are things, that putting an intention into something makes it happen, right? Then doesn't it stand to reason also, Christopher, that if an object, an inanimate object, is around a certain kind of energy, behavior, intentions, manifestations, coming off of living things, that it's picking up that intention in the same way that thoughts become things, things become a product of the thoughts, right? So when tragedy happens around an object, when somebody owns an object and loves it, and then a horrible thing happens, when somebody is suffering abuse and how they do it, they're crying to their music box every night, it stands to reason that those things are picking up the emotional and spiritual imprints of the living things around them, right?
Well, indeed, and that's why it really goes to say that you've got to start letting go of this bitterness and this. I'm not going to get into this, but when I was in the hospital, I don't know, I think it was about 6 years ago or maybe 5 years ago now, there was one thing that I had something wrong with me that kind of came overnight, it seemed like. Then they told me it was growing for over 9 years, probably right after we did the exorcist file, actually. We went to the exorcist house. Something was inside of me that was growing for very slowly for about 9 years. So suddenly it hit me overnight, and I ended up in the hospital to have it removed, something that was in the middle of me. And all I could really think about was, I'm glad that I was spiritually awakened, because it didn't matter to me whether I stayed or went, as long as I was at peace. And I think now when you look at all these items and these things around you, and you start putting out negativity because something goes wrong, and suddenly that attaches to your surroundings, it stains the walls, or maybe even stains a new suit that you bought. Now you look at that suit and you have trauma because something bad happened when you're wearing that suit. And I think that's what's really important, to learn to let it go, things to let go. Otherwise, they get attached to a lot of things. And that's also why you need sometimes professional help. And I think also why you really need your friends at the right time. Of course, you have to be the right friends. And I think you know what I mean by that. The ones that not hang around for ulterior motives, but ones that are really true and really care about you. Because a lot of these paranormal situations, nobody was around to tell them to let go. And they're still walking today trying to find the answer. And I've seen that so many times in the asylums, like the show you're talking about, The Attached. You take the Rebecca incident where she lost her baby in the hospital. She's, you know, would be destined to walk completely around in circles through her life and through her death. And so it's important to help her understand and tell a story to make not only just her and other people realize that you've got to let it go and realize there are other things that are beautiful out there if you can get through this.
That is absolutely the truth. And I think that's true. And I think that we are, as human beings, and more so depending on our level of empathy, right? Everybody has a channel. When you're an empath, your channel is like a tunnel instead of a straw. But we are picking up the imprints of everything that we're exposed to the same way that inanimate objects do. And we are a reflection. You know, I always say when I teach that we are the accumulation of everyone who's loved us and everyone who's screwed us over. And we are picking up those imprints, both positive and negative, all the time. And we need to make sure that we are constantly assessing them. And we are constantly putting what we want to keep in the good pile, letting go of what doesn't need to be there, and then becoming and staying open for new new memories and new imprint, right? I mean, it's a constantly changing life, this human incarnation, this semester of soul school. Every time you're back here in a new body, it's really about learning and growing constantly. And the information changes from minute to minute, the same way that if you're taking a class for a semester, you're not studying the same thing, right? You're studying one thing and taking a test on it. Then you're studying something else and taking a test on it. And that's kind of, I think, what it's like to be alive.
It's exactly right. And that's what it does. And that's exactly what is going on with a lot of people who don't realize that you go to a different grade, right, in school, right? There's 12 years of grades you go through, you know, that means you keep learning and you keep moving on and you meet new friends and you get new, you know, boyfriend, girlfriends, and you get new cars and you get new houses and you keep changing. And the problem is when you realize you're holding on to something when it's ready to change the grade and you're still saying, no, I'm staying in grade 7, but you can't do it. So it's going to be, you're fighting it now. You're fighting the universe. You're fighting the change. And it's really hard to understand that because we fall in love and we don't like change because it's insecure and it's scary out there. Change is always scary. We don't know what's going to happen and becomes fear and start to realize that if you just entrust in what is going to be around the corner, I mean, you have to be cautious. And I get that you have to have the insight and you have to have your head together, but you also can't be afraid to change. I mean, I can't tell you how well you know how much I've gone through change the last year, but the thing is, I've really realized that I always thought it was two steps to heaven, kind of every couple of years. Not meaning you're getting close to die or to move on. It's actually getting closer to be a higher power and join that. Meaning you're getting more intelligent, like. In the Hindu religion, the ones that wear the white turbans are the most wisest. So you always would go to the one that has the white turban because they're the oldest and the wisest. They know the most. I think in today's age, which is almost very dangerous, there's a lot of people that think they don't need to talk to the wise and they don't need to talk to the seasonal and the people that have wisdom. They think they already know it at all, and that's where this whole, you know, council culture and everything has been happening. Things need to change, but they need to change with a wise feeling about them, if you know what I mean. They can't just be changed on a draw of a thing because this is going down. It has to have a very, you know, very serious wisdom behind it. And it's like, you know, when you're in the paranormal and you want your house cleared by a demonologist, you don't want a 16-year-old child with acne knocking at your door saying, I'm the demonologist, I'll handle this, ma'am, step out of the way. You want, you know, you want someone that's about 82 years
yep.
old that's done this for
yep.
a long time. And he goes in, he goes,
yep.
step aside, I've got this. And it's like a doctor, you don't want, you know, somebody fresh out of McDonald's doing your operation. Well, you need somebody
right,
that's
yes.
really experienced and done it, because then that's also respect. All the years that all these people have put into their craft, especially to heal, and you just think, oh, I know it all. Not only is it
exactly.
disrespectful to yourself, it's disrespectful to all the people that put all that time to help. So I think, you know, there are prodigies indeed, but I think the biggest prodigy, Jesus, learned from all the best, including Buddha, including from everybody, and everybody learned off each other. They weren't competing. Religion was never meant to compete. It was meant to be one big higher power.
I agree. And we are all connected and we're one human family. And I talk about that a lot on this show. I talk about it even on, we talked about this a little bit when you did Haunted Playground with me, my Wednesday show here, how important the cohesiveness is between paranormal investigators and psychic mediums. We're all in this together. We all have the same agenda of spreading the word of the paranormal to more people so less people are having experiences and are frightened to talk about them. Why we work against each other is ridiculous. We need to be working more together. And I think across the board, as human beings, we need to be working more together.
Absolutely, no doubt. I was saying this, I think, today to somebody. Well, imagine if everybody was just helping each other and was on the same track. It's like there's a thing saying that, I mean, and we're all guilty of it. When somebody does well, you go, well, I'm happy for you. And you're going like, oh, so you're not happy. You're not happy for yourself. You're just happy. You're just saying, well, I'm happy for you that you're doing well. Well, Dalai Lama teaches we're all one. Buddhism teaches we're all one. So when Sheena does well, I'm so excited because I'm doing well because we're one. But it's too much, oh, I'm happy for you. Now I've got to compete and do something better. And that's where it's a constant rat race that you will never win, instead of being very comfortable where you are at and feeling great that Sheena's doing so well. I'm so excited, you know, and, you know, I'm just, you know, we're one, you know, she's like, we are one. She's my friend. I'm her friend. And we're doing good together.
Right. But that's the difference, right? And I talk about this a lot on this show, Christopher. That's the difference in an abundance consciousness and a scarcity consciousness, right? Scarcity consciousness is, well, wow, your film did well. Does that mean something? I'm not going to get something. And then an abundance consciousness is saying, well, your film did well. That means that good things will happen for me, because when one of us wins, we all win. But it's hard sometimes to take human beings who are culturalized and socialized towards a scarcity consciousness to believe that it's really about when you win, I win. It's not about you win, so there's something I'm not going to get.
I know it all started, I'm afraid, and it's nothing. It's really hard to break, but it started with the child going, and naturally, mine, mine, mine. Maybe we should teach them that it's everybody's, and share it more, and understand as a parent, as the ultimate teacher, which is an incredible compliment. If someone wants to use you as a teacher, it's incredible, but you need to teach them that it's not mine. It's everybody's. It's keeping sharing, because then you get up. Imagine now that child's growing up. It's mine. It's mine. It's mine. That's going to escalate to the point that where you're going to go with that at that point. You're going to be very self-centered. You're going to be very greedy. You're going to be very competitive. There's nothing wrong with good competitivity as long as you work together. But I've always tried to teach my son that the right between mine and wrong, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. You know, I have a friend who's a civil rights activist. And when he was very young, first starting out with it, he went to go see this kind of well-known guru speak. And he said he walked in, and the first thing she said is, if you're here because you want to support my cause, you're in the wrong place. If you're here because you realize that my cause is also your cause, you're in the right place. And I always think about that, because that's so true, right? Everybody's cause is the same. When I watch The Attached, which I watch with my partner and two of our kids, it was so, think that experience for all of them who had not seen one of your films before, that it's not just about, oh, I feel sorry for the people in these cases. It's about, wow, you know what? I see in myself that isolation. I remember when I felt lonely. I remember that kind of grief when something happened to me. I know what it would be like to be so lonely that my spirit was still resonating through an object because there was that strong of an emotional imprint in it. When you see stories, you see yourself in them. And especially when you see things that are documentary, I think it's so good to see how a situation could also be your situation. You know what I mean? Because we forget sometimes that there are things going on in the world outside of what's going on inside of us. And we also forget that everybody's struggle is very much like our own. And I think sometimes clients will say to me a lot, well, you know, why does God hate me? Or, you know, the universe has picked me out to screw over. And I'm like, oh, honey, no. Everybody is going through what you're going through. We're all going through the same stuff. We just feel it different because it's not ours. You know what I mean? So here, Christopher, you are making this wonderful film But in the journey of making this film, a bunch of things are going on in your own personal life, right? Which is was a kind of grief, was certainly loneliness, was certainly trying to figure out where you belonged post that situation. And I would imagine that as you were editing this film and watching it over and over again, you were seeing in yourself a lot of what these poor people felt.
I was. Well, I mean, obviously the film is very personal. It took over 4 years and we shot it about, four or five different asylums and haunted places. And also the Annalise McKell box has a very special thing for me, because we didn't want to make Who's the Real Emily Rose. We didn't really want to make her what everybody, you know, jumps on, that she's a demon and a monster, because that's not what happened. She believed in something so bad she ended up giving her life up for it. She believed that dying with the demons inside her was a way to prove to everybody and to the church that this was real, and she could help, you know, shed some light more on that. Instead of just getting exercised and possibly living, she chose the martyr approach. She chose the saint approach, you know, and that is something that no one ever touches on in that story. So we felt we needed to touch the emotional side of it, even though, as you know, The Attached has a lot of scary moments. Discovery Plus calls it a horror movie, which is a very interesting concept. I don't really think it's a horror movie as much as it is the reality, which you will know this well than a lot of people, is the reality of the paranormal, how seriously it can get and how it can change your life and screw up your life. And in sense of my life, there was just a lot of changing going on, as well as there was talk about people getting attachments, people possibly not getting attached, but possibly having mental breakdowns and all kinds of situations. But it was all wrapped in when I was trying to finish this film, and also having certain people in the film that I was attached to emotionally was really made it hard to finish the film as well. So there was so much going on, and I had to be very clear and professional and know what we needed to do with this film, and wanted it to help. The main was to help people understand, like Rebecca's story at St. Albans. It's not just a story of Rebecca, her getting some redemption and understanding the loss of her baby and being thrown away when no one wanted her. I got thrown away that nobody wanted me. That's what happened to me. You know, it was like that person didn't want me anymore. But that, with Rebecca's story, she was thrown in an asylum in the middle of nowhere, unloved. And you know, she got pregnant and lost the baby. And, you know, pretty much what happens to a lot of women every single day, hundreds of women every single day all over the world. So I was hoping that story would shed light that it was telling the story of them as well, as not to feel so lost that you get into such a mechanical fall down, meaning it's just one after another until you're so far gone you can't even get back up, which is what happened to me making this film, because I had my major breakup of my marriage, and literally I lost a child and a wife in 5 minutes, pretty much.
Wow.
And it's over 7 years. And that really, really hit me hard, because, you know, in relationships, you feel that you know, nobody's saying nobody's a bad guy or a good guy. And it's, I know stuff happens and I get that. But what you do is you start to think, you know, what have I done wrong? What is happening? What did they do wrong? What did I do wrong? And you go back and forth all the time here until you try to figure it out. But you actually end up driving yourself mad, because, you know, whether it's being gaslighted or whatever happens, you just can't understand it. And all you just want to know is you want the pain to stop. As in Rebecca's story, she just wanted the pain to stop. And she committed suicide. Well, I came close to that, But I
know, my friend.
There was something that kept me going, and that was not just my son, because I had my son still, Gabriel. It was my stepdaughter that I lost, but I was kept going with my son, knowing that he needed me. And what's really sad, which I don't want to get into how sad it was, because there is a happy ending. I believe in everything you go through. I couldn't even start to tell you what I've learned from Eckhart Tolle when he talks about how the cross, the crucifix, is not only a blessed object, but it's actually an icon of torture. And you have to have an icon of torture to create change. And something that I learned listening to his podcast with Russell Brand, which I love dearly, both of them together, is like, not only is it a very entertaining time, but it's a very spiritual, enlightening conversation. But I realized there was no way I was going to evolve without being totally destroyed. Totally. So totally destroyed, there was no way of going backwards. There was either sitting at the bottom and then totally at that point calling it, or getting back up and rebuilding and then changing my life. And I remember going through all this, and it was hard. I lost 25 pounds within 2 weeks. I didn't eat at all. I couldn't sleep. I was so heartbroken, and I couldn't understand it. You know, I'm not going to get into what happened and all that stuff, but it was destroyed me, totally destroyed me. And it was really hard for me to understand, enough that I couldn't get it together. So I slowly, you know, reached out to trying to pull it together. My brother Philip came up, and he stayed with me and helped me get it together, and a bunch of good friends, Amy and Perry, who are spiritual, very spiritual healers, helped me. He's I couldn't even pronounce it. He's basically studying to be a Buddhist. I want to say a Buddhist in the desert. I mean, that's probably the strongest way to do it, but it's a form of of African religion and Buddhism. And he just was telling me all this stuff, and I was listening, and I was soaking it up. It was enough to kind of keep me floating, but it was really hard. It was really hard. And so then I just sunk myself into making an album, finishing an album, which I released called Elysium, which is, I don't know if you've heard it, I've got to shoot one over to you, but it's all spiritual music. It's Tibetan music, and it is, I basically had written over the course of a year, this whole thing that happened to me happened in a year, so it was written over a year, and then after it finally finalized, I found out what happened, and I couldn't deal with it anymore, and then it got worse, and then da-da-da, and I got into depression. I mixed it. I mixed the album and released it. And I have to tell you, I mean, it turned out absolutely gorgeous, but there are very moments in it that is like, you know, when you're playing piano and you play lighter and you're hitting the hammers on a piano, you can go lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter, till the hammer doesn't even move anymore. So it's the felt is just slowly touching the string. That was me dying. So I recorded that, and you can hear that in the piano playing, which actually turned out to be the song of Rebecca's suicide.
Music is featured in the film.
That's correct. And that song is her suicide. So it was very powerful to put my experience with that experience. So after that, the album was released, and it made Apple's top 10 music instantly. And it features a lot of Tibetan women singers and very world music and a lot of piano, Nine Inch Nail type stuff, as well as very worldly music. And it's one of my finest pieces of work. So then I made two music videos after that. And then throughout that time, then came my son to visit. And that's where I broke down again, because now he wanted to know where his family was.
Yeah.
And his family, there was no one at his birthday party. So it was really hard. And he was, you know, he held me. He's 13 years old, you know, and he took care of me. It was absolutely
Beautiful. An
incredible bonding experience. An experience that I'm so happy that I was able to get. And so that helped me get together, and we talked about it, and he understood. And we didn't really understand. He tried to understand. And I know that he went through some terrible times at Christmas because of it. And, you know, he won't sleep in his room at all anymore because of the memories of, you know, his stepdaughter going in there and stuff. So it's been really difficult. But, you know, what it did for me is it was so like car accident. I mean, God bless everyone that's gone through the deaths. I didn't really have a death, but I had a death of my life of it as it was. And I was so in love and so did not understand that it took me almost a year to get over it. But every month positive things started happening. And I remember, and I don't know if I told you this, and I think this is why you wanted me on this show, but I wanted to tell you that I couldn't stand it anymore. And I was rocking back and forth. And it wasn't like I was drinking, and I could. I could have went out and got all the drugs and the alcohol in the world. I mean, I did have a glass or two of vodka. It was mostly just to help me sleep. I couldn't do melatonin because it affected my mood, where I got really depressed. And if I was going to get any more depressed, oh, my God. You know, I mean, I would have gone all that
Not
way.
Good.
You know, I would have gone that. And it's just really a fine line at that point. It's that one last string. So I just remember that I rocked back and forth, and I can't do this anymore. I can't do this. I was rocking back and forth, and I heard a voice. And it was so weird. It was like a loud voice. And I was in the house by myself, and I slept in my son's room because I couldn't even sleep in our bedroom anymore because of all the memories and the fighting and the stuff that I found out and all that stuff. I couldn't do it anymore. So I slept in my son's bedroom for 6 months. I couldn't sleep anywhere in the house anymore. So I would be rocking back and forth, and I heard this voice that said, I mean, and I swear it was just like a really strong voice. It's not like a voice in your head. It was like, you must change everything, it said. You must change everything. And that was my first really strong glimpse of hope of pulling myself back together. And I went, oh, okay, what does that mean exactly? Why must change everything? So I started changing everything. I started changing things that I was afraid to do, you know, things that I put off. Like, you know, if I was afraid to do this, I would do it. If I was going to not watch something, I would watch this TV show now. If I was going to not call somebody because I was introverted and I was being, don't talk to me. I just want to talk to anybody. I would go out of my way to change my habit, to change my mindset that was literally killing me. My mindset of staying on a course that was negative, that was not escalating me, not putting me on to a higher path. I changed everything looking to find the steps I needed to get out of it. So I kept changing, and then I wanted to get a tattoo, you know. I only had 2 tattoos in my lifetime, and I wanted to do some tattoos, and I always put it off because I was too busy. And, you know, I know it sounds strange, but I wanted to do this, you know. So I actually got over 42 tattoos within 4 weeks.
Wow.
I mean, literally 42 tattoos. And, you know, it's like I want to sleeve, you know. And everybody says, well, it takes years to do a sleeve, you know. And I said, I don't got the time anymore. I said, I don't have the time anymore. I'm going to live my life like I don't have it tomorrow. So I kept booking an appointment, and we did 1, 2, 3 tattoos a day, it seemed like. And now, and they were, and every tattoo is a spiritual tattoo. It's Buddha. It's Buddhism writing that says, live or die without regret. There's symbols of karma. There's Viking runes. There's all kinds of things. I mean, it's all spiritual in every religion. It's pagan. It's, I mean, every higher power style is on me, whether it's Buddhism or I got Shiva, you know, Hindu, Buddhist, everything is on me. And it's all beautifully colored and spiritual. And then I remember somebody saying on Facebook to me, you've got to be, you think about what you're getting tattooed. You're going crazy. Are you okay? You can't hide your pain in getting tattoos. You must face it. And I'm going like, well, the tattoo needle is far easier pain than what I've gone through. So I liked the pain. I liked it. It made me realize.
That. Yeah.
Yes, it made me, I mean, I got a complete Viking, the sign of the sun dial on my chest. It's incredible. It's the 9 layers of Odin, Asgard, and all over it. So I had Viking tattoos also. It's very, very cool. And I think very sexy too, but that's my opinion. But it made me start to feel strong. And I'm not saying I used it as a crutch, but maybe I did. But I was getting it, the pain was making me strong, and I was becoming a stronger person. I was becoming more enlightened. And then before I knew it, I was the person I wanted to be, because I was made to be that kind of person. And I was going through this. My business started getting booming business each week, and a new project, a new contact. MGM called us up to shoot for them. I got a huge commercial to do. I got a bunch of infomercials that paid good money for doctors. You know, the money was getting, and this is all during COVID, which was shut down. And here we are doing, I mean, I had 15 shows cancel, which actually led to also my breakup because of the financial and because of the stress. And I understood that as well. But being, you know, somebody that I really wanted to take care of, my significant other, I hustled, and we ended up making more money than we ever did in those 3 months that all those shows were canceled. So I kind of felt like I was doing what I needed to do, but that wasn't good enough to the universe. The universe needed saying, no, you can't do this anymore. So this is going to happen so terrible to you that you don't have a choice. You're either going to call it, or you're going to get back on your feet, and you're going to change. And so
I love that.
I've been doing it ever since. And then that actually led me to finishing The Attached. Remember, it was 4 years in the making. So COVID made us finish. My breakup made us finish The Attached. It made me change. And then it also made me conceive and write, and with a bunch of incredible other writers, and a brand new movie that we just finished last week called Never Blink.
Amazing.
Which is a horror movie.
4 years is a lot for you. Normally you crank them out very quickly.
Yes, well, this was financed by us, but also I had gotten into the trap of making a very good amount of money with my other businesses, which we were selling Oddities and Curiosities under a name called Haunted Bazaar. And we were selling stuff that was really cool, voodoo and all kind of really cool stuff. But there was a lot of interesting energy, you know, involved in that. And, you know, there were people around me that felt they were getting, you know, bad energy from certain things. And so I had the house blessed about 9 times. I don't know if you know Bishop Christina Rake, but she came over and she blessed
right,
my house several times.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm dying to have her on the show. I became a fan from The Attached. I can't. I might stalk her a little to get her on the show now.
I can have her on your show in seconds. She's one of my best friends. She's absolutely a beautiful human being, and she helped me also through what I went through. She told me a lot of things, you know, and I am very spiritual, but as far as being religious, believing everything that man has made up. And I mean that with the most respect, but it's true. Man has made it to make money, that Jesus, whether he was the Son of God or a prophet, it's a really good story. And the point is that Jesus helped people, Buddha helped people. I don't know if you know the story of Buddha, how even Buddha became, but he was locked up in a castle, and then one day he needed to see what was going on, and when he walked out there, he was never allowed to see poor people or old people ever, Buddha, never. And so one day he escaped from his father, and he found all the empathy in the world out there that he couldn't deal with without becoming one of those people where he needed to live poorly. He needed to not eat. He needed to do that because he couldn't stand being higher than them. And that's an absolutely beautiful story, a beautiful concept behind all that, which I want to believe. You know, obviously every story is, you know, obviously mostly or partly true, and then a lot of it is, you know, embellished. But the good parts I get from that, the good parts I get from the Bible, you know, doesn't matter if you lost as long as you're found. Beautiful stuff like that, it's really incredible. So it's, you know, a very good thing to be involved in all that spirituality. And, of course, that crossed over into the attached. And, you know, Philip had to not only try and make sure I was okay, but he had to finish editing it. And it was hard because we had a lot of, taintedness that we went through in the film. That was involved in the film. So we had to be professional. My ex is in the film as well, and she's great in the film.
Yes.
She's very passionate in the film, but it was really hard because there was so much hurt from both sides. You know, I hurt her, she hurt me, and whatever. I'm not saying anybody's to blame. I'm just saying how it went down was not very cool. So it was enough to make me change my life now to where I am completely see things even more. I was always spiritual, as you know, but I needed that. And I wanted that to be said so that people realize that when you truly are at your lowest, that's actually truest, where's your first step for your highest. Because you can only go up from there. And I read something today that's absolutely beautiful that Anthony Hopkins wrote. And I don't know if you saw it, but it was on my page. And I won't go through the whole thing. But basically his concept and his truth, the most important thing you have is your energy. And I realized now, I keep learning from you. I keep learning from anybody that I truly respect, that you should only surround yourself with people you do respect. You should only surround you with people that only makes you feel good and make you feel good about yourself. Like, nobody wants to be around somebody that feels belittled or demeaned or, hey, you know, imagine being told, I don't feel anything for you after spending a long time with that person.
Well, but I think that there are people who, without giving you a free psychic reading, there are people who, because of their own isms and issues that they haven't dealt with, they emotionally compartmentalize themselves. And when the wind blows inside of them and they decide now it's time for a new direction, they have a way of cutting off their emotions and not really feeling anything for people they had promised with, or be friends forever with, or be family forever with. For some people, it's like the door to the castle just comes down, and then there's nothing for you. And for people who are extremely empathic like us, for people who have sympathy for people who have even done very bad things to us, we still sympathize and empathize with them and hold space in our heart for them. it's hard to understand why with some people the wall comes down, and that's just it. And the answer is because. There's really no real answer. I think those of us that are seekers, right, Christopher, we're always looking for the answer. If I can just find the answer, it'll be okay. I deal with that with my clients all the time. But why? But what's the answer? And sometimes the answer just is the wind blew, and for whatever reason, the door to the castle came down, and that was it. No more access. It's a hard thing to deal with when you don't emotionally process like that, right?
Well, Sheena, you actually did just give me a psychic reading, love, because you're
Eric,
right on.
There you go.
You are
my friend,
right,
because
on.
I love you. Yeah.
You are right on, by the way. And I knew that, and I knew about the situations that was emotionally troubling, and I get that. And I understand the theory behind it. I understand, and yes, Siku, getting an answer, which I finally did get an answer, by the way, just recently, that it, I'm not saying it made it feel better, but it made me be able to now understand that I wasn't crazy. I mean, there's nothing worse than feeling like you're crazy and you know you're not. Like, you know the sky is blue, but someone keeps telling you that it's black or something, or you say black is white and white is black, and you go, no, it's not. My whole life I know that black is black. You can't tell me this. And then someone is the opposite. Then because you are weak and you're following the path of trying to be this great person, you end up agreeing that it's white. And then you start to feel like you're crazy, which really knocks you down. But at the same time, I think, you know, what Anthony Hopkins put up something today, and he was more to the point. He just said, just don't do it. You know, give up on people that won't take your advice. Don't go around anyone that steals your energy. Don't be around anybody that doesn't give it back. They just steal it, and then they leave you dry. They belittle you. They
yeah.
demean you. They use you and abuse you. But you're, oh, because you're compassionate and you have empathy, you keep going back, and you think that is going to buy you karma in heaven or something. And I think what buys you truly that karmatic and that final step of gateway to St. Peter, so to speak, is when you are true to yourself and you have no ulterior motive. I know in my heart that we've all done wrong things, but if you do it premeditated, you do it as an ulterior motive, you do it as, you know, as an attack, then that's different than accidentally saying something or doing something because you didn't mean it. You got mad, and yeah, I'm sorry. And people that are conscious and people that are mature and awakened can understand that. But when you're dealing with a negative energy of people unawakened, or you can't get that through. So it's just, I think it's really important to make peace with yourself, that you know that you did it the right way. And everything I did for my change, I did it the right way. I never put any negativity out, never blamed anybody, and I'm still not doing that now. What I'm trying to say is what happened to me made me a better person, and it also made me, and I'm not saying that I was after it, but it made my business more successful because I got very focused. It made my relationship with my son truly stronger. It opened my eyes to new energy, new people that are truly, I could see people that were, you know, Sheena, do you ever walk around and people come up to you and say they must talk to you because they can tell that you're awakened, or they feel that you have
yeah.
an angel inside you, or that you
all
are an angel?
Yeah,
yeah.
All the
because
time.
When you are awakened, you know, you in Los Angeles still, right? Are you still in L.A., right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, 40
down
years.
By the psychic eye shop, remember on Ventura Boulevard, right? The psychic
sure,
eye shop.
Yeah.
I was there, and someone would just came right into me, and they walked up to me and said, "Oh my God, you've talked to the same angel I did," and you don't even know them, and you find real that they're awakened and you're awakened, and then there's also ones that are hovering around the witchcraft department on the dark magic place, which. At the same time, when you become enlightened, you have to make sure that you don't get swallowed up by the dark. Because
yeah.
the lighter you become, the dark and recognizes that was put in disappointments and things that happen that will try to set you off, and you have to know how to get over them and stay the course. And that's
absolutely
what I realized.
I always say when I teach, the more you step into the light, the more the darkness pays attention. The brighter you burn, the more you attract the dark as well, because they want to see what's going on.
Well, Saint Germain, in 2000, I was working for Playboy, and I was doing all their European movies. We did like 82 films in 2 years for them. And the money paid really good, and basically my job was to put together, back then they had to have a reason to be erotic back then on cable, so they hired us to make these films look like real films. So we would bring in incredible art direction and production design, carriages, and rent castles and wardrobe from, you know, like real movies, whether it was like Elizabeth. I would go to the Western costume, Warner Brothers costume, and I would rent the same outfits they used in Elizabeth, or, you know, whatever, quills. And then we would make these high-end Playboy films, right? But what happened is, after a while, I started seeing darkness in it.
Yeah.
And I could feel the souls of these girls trying to get out, and I ended up trying to help them, you know, which they didn't appreciate, not the girls appreciated, but the producers didn't. Because I'm going like,
yeah,
no, this isn't for you. Let me help you get out of it. You know, and some of them were actually studying to be doctors, and they were using the money to help their medical degrees, which is, you know, cool, you know, but I saw a lot of horrible stuff to the point that I couldn't do it. So I remember that I started doing a lot of drugs, and I couldn't deal with it because of all of it. So one day I couldn't deal with anything. So I quit drugs, I quit alcohol, and I quit even eating meat. And I read my first Eckhart Tolle book, The Power of Now. And that changed me. My first major change to the spirituality of understanding of mass hysteria and understanding the dark. And then I studied Saint Germain. I am a being of violet fire, I have purity, God's desire, which is affirmations. You say, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, 108 times. You're supposed to reach a higher level. With the Saint Germain, I'm a being of violet fire, I'm of purity, God's desire, is an affirmation that you say, not as many as the Om Mani Padme Hum, but what happens, it clears your dirt off of your aura. And then you imagine a basketball stuck in mud, and suddenly the mud cracks and it slides down your head, and then your light is clear, you can see. Now that's when the darkness really knocked on my door, because I was really awakened.
Yes.
And that's where you have to have that
light protection
aura around you. Because then the more successful you become, the more people trying to knock you down and take you down.
Absolutely.
So you have to be very protective. And obviously, I wasn't reaching. Obviously, you know, I haven't reached my highest power. So this had to happen. I thought this was everything to me. You know, I'm hoping that this connects to viewers. I hope that my marriage was everything. I was going to live happily ever after. Well, that didn't happen, but something else did happen.
See,
I became
happens,
more spiritually
right?
aware. Yes.
That's what happened.
And I started
connecting
to people that were like-minded like me, people that collectively that appreciated my downfalls, but used my downfalls so that they weren't downfalls. I was a sensitive artist. They knew that, and they know that that's the kind of what I needed. I needed that kind of, because that was what I've always been in my life as an artist. Since I was 13,
absolutely,
I was always creating, musician. And then you had people saying, you know, well, if you love me more, you need to do this. And I'm going, well, you are everything to me. But then I have this art, which is everything to me, and I don't need to put it on a balancing scale. You are the one person for me. This is my career for me. And this is my family. But you have to put everything away for one person. Your balance becomes off. And the things I learned was why I got off is my balance was off. Because you have heart You have cold, you have water, you have dry. There's all these signs in the world showing you you have to be balanced. If you work too much, you lose your family. Sure. If you your family too much, you lose your business. So you have to be
right.
balanced, and I was out of balance. So
well, and sometimes,
the universe
sweetheart, you
slapped
just,
me.
Sometimes you just outgrow. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you just outgrow.
Yes.
Sometimes you grow faster than other folks grow, and you just leave them behind. I mean, it's a horrible fact of life that sometimes you outgrow those you love. And sometimes also you stop trying to save people. You stop trying to see the potential inside everyone and what you can do to fix it. And you just start letting people be who they are. And sometimes they can take that ride with you, and sometimes they can't. And it just depends on how much they're willing to grow. You know, when you're growing very quickly and you're ascending very quickly, everyone's trying to catch up. And some people can do it and some people can't. And I think what you've done now is there's been a reboot. And now you're seeking out people who are ascended to your level. So they're people that you have more in common with and not trying to pull everybody up with you. It's great to send the elevator down and pull folks up, but they have to be folks that want to come. And some people fight ascension kicking and screaming, right? They don't want to move forward. And you can't do anything about that. You can only walk your path, have your own relationship, and do the best you can do to make the world a better place. You're not responsible because somebody else didn't want to grow, however painful it is as a person on the earth, right? It's not your responsibility to force everyone's ascension. It's a hard thing to learn. It was a very hard thing to learn for me.
You know, you are very, I have to say, and I don't think I've actually told you this as much, but listening to you, I guess there's a word actually in pick up my energy via this phone call. You are dead on with everything you are saying. You really are. And yes, that's exactly where I'm at right now. I'm actually, there's someone that I'm dating that is very highly spiritual, involved, very powerful. And we are connected mostly by the fact of the higher power more than anything
yep.
else makes everything
beautiful.
Truly having in common of the love is so Jesus. There's actually a saying called Jesus like in teachings. It's a Jesus like
yeah.
feeling. It's a Jesus like love.
Right, Seth.
And if you know what a Jesus like
mm-hmm.
love is, it's like Jesus loving a child. There's
yep.
nothing it's more powerful than God loving his children. And that is in such an incredible energy and power that you couldn't trade that for a movie night ever, even though movie nights is a good balance. But that
absolutely
is an
true.
Incredible feeling of growth. And then there's nothing
I absolutely
higher
agree.
And nothing more that turns you
that
on than
true.
Being involved in a higher power mission.
Love that.
Nothing.
My friend, they just gave me the 90-second thing. We are completely out of time. Please come and do this again with me. And you and I need to stay in touch more and spend more time together. You let me know. I'm always here when you need me. Where can people find you and find The Attached, my friend?
The Attached is theattachedmovie.com. And actually, we have a limited release on DVD before it hits network. And you get a free poster, and you get it autographed and get it at SpookTV.com, SpookTV.com. And we have
thank
a few
you.
Available, and the soundtrack's available. And of course, please listen to my album, Elysium. It truly is, I think my best thing is that the doctors, the hospitals have ordered it to help their patients get over pain. That was my
beautiful.
Biggest
I can't wait, my
compliment
friend.
I could
you
ever
are
get.
Such a
I'm going to send you
precious
one, love.
Gift on
I'm
this earth. I
one.
Can't wait. You are such a precious gift on this earth, my friend, and I adore you. Thank you for being here on the show. You are wonderful. For anybody who missed those links, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com, LiveParanormal.com. I'm so honored to be a part of the Live Paranormal Network. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always raise your vibration. I love you all, and I'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves until then.